This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Brave New World edition.
We're in the eighth floor, Rog. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about. We're in a different. There's a window washer outside our normal studio.
Yeah.
Banging away.
Sent by Blatter.
As is his wont. Yeah, yeah. Trying to keep us
down.
Trying
to shut us down.
Yeah, you don't shut us down like that, yeah. Blatter. Who do you think
we
are?
We moved to the eighth floor.
You know,
Dave-O's
Loretta.
Got another floor.
I know Loretta Lynch, and you're no Loretta Lynch, Mr. Blatter.
Yeah.
How have you savoured your first post-Blatter morning? Doesn't America feel different this morning, Dave-O?
My
coffee tasted different.
It does. Coffee tastes a little less bitter, Rog. It is. It's an amazing, brave new world, Rog. And it's weird because it's the end of the football season, so there's less football around. And yet the football world that is around feels more liberated. It feels cleaner. It feels purer in some way, Rog.
And it's all projection because it isn't.
Yeah,
exactly. But I'll say, I've rarely felt prouder to live in America, David.
Yeah, and you feel proud of living in America a lot.
I've taken it to 11.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
No, it was already at 11.
I think
you're at more like 184 right now, Rog.
I feel like the defenestration of Sepp Blatter is the United States' greatest gift to Europe since the launch of MTV Europe.
Has he been totally defenestrated yet, though, Rog? We're going to get to that.
We'll chat about it in the A block. American soccer history. It hasn't had many high points outside of the great women's victories. But Sepp Blatter's resignation in Zurich yesterday may have been the biggest trophy of all, David.
I think we're still in the horror movie, Rog, though. He still might come back in some way.
That could happen. But right now, I've not been so excited since Piers Morgan's show was cancelled on CNN. That's how excited I am. A big, huge sigh of relief, but personally, David.
Yeah.
I've been hanging back on subway platforms. I'm normally quite close to the subway edge kind of man.
Are you?
Yeah. This week I've been standing flat against the wall in case FIFA operatives push me onto the tracks.
There have been some warnings. You have been saying some fairly, forthright, I think one would say, things about Sepp Blatter.
I think calling him a cockroach has a different meaning in America than it does in England.
But, I don't think it does.
After
French, German and Romance gets even worse, Rog.
I got a call from a security company telling me to not stand too close to the tracks, which was truly terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm also a bit worried. What on earth is John Oliver going to talk about now? What do you think now that Blatter's dead?
He didn't do FIFA every week. Rog.
I don't know what Johnny's going to do.
Yeah.
We'll chat more about FIFA in this pod. Can we just talk about one quick thing, Dave, at the top of the show?
Yeah.
This is our first no Premier League weekend, Dave. I barely survived. I want to know, how did you spend the weekend?
Well, there was an FA Cup final. FA Cup final.
Yeah, and we'll chat about that. But we had people around for brunch for the first time in about
what
5
people?
Months.
Who?
Some of my wife's friends.
It wasn't me.
I put the FA Cup final on.
Why wasn't Dave invited?
What did you do to get through the week? I found it dark.
I played a bit of golf. I'm becoming really good at playing 3-hole, 6-hole, 9-hole, 12-hole golf. I don't ever play 18 holes anymore. And I played a 12-hole round, and I've played 2 3-hole rounds this weekend.
What's a 3-hole round?
I play 3 holes with my daughter, with the Jage. We go around, and we play a 3-hole round.
Are you mad, man? That's like drinking a half bottle of wine.
No,
why?
But when
why?
You're,
why?
JJ is part elf. She is about 2'3" high, and she just can't carry her golf bag more than 3 holes. So we can only get through 3 holes. It includes the number one handicap hole straight into the wind, which even from the ladies' tees, she struggles. But she got a 7 on the number one handicap hole on the course, straight into the wind. So I was very pleased with her about that.
For more of that, you can listen to our other podcast, Today in Juvenile Golf.
Yeah, today I'm pushing your daughter to play golf.
Do you know what I did
irresponsibly
this weekend?
Yeah.
I went to see my tailor.
Yep.
At Freeman Sporting Club.
I also went, and did that too.
And ordered 2 new summer suits, David.
Seersucker.
I'm going all in seersucker. I could not be more. How do you feel about seersucker?
Do you know what? I don't know. I used to go to, growing up in London, I don't know if you had these up north. Rog.
But we I don't know what it is, but the answer is no.
We had, well, no, they did have one in Edinburgh as well. So, but it might have missed the north.
That's
between,
like the southern
between
part of
England
the north.
And Scotland. Is there were these great American vintage stores called Flip, Rog. Yep. And there was one in Covent Garden. I remember
and
there
one
being
in one Edinburgh.
In, yeah, one in Edinburgh. And at Flip, they would have rows and racks and racks and racks and racks of old American clothes. And so you would just see things that you would never, ever see in England. And seersucker was something they had. And I think I had owned a seersucker jacket for a very brief period of time that came from some men's clothiers in, you know, like, it was something like Omaha or Tulsa or somewhere that sounded so exotic at the time to a young Davo. Oh,
Flip. I brought, in Edinburgh Flip, I brought a brown corduroy jacket.
That's
there
so
was the same
English teacher of
brown
you.
Corduroy jacket as Brian Adams wore in one of his first music videos.
Really?
I think I've still got it somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm going to run to you, Brian.
First place I ever bought vintage Levi's 501s.
Yeah.
Used to buy, you know, those sort of great American overcoats with, like, patterns on them that would have, like, checks. Nothing we ever had in England like that. We didn't have checks. Nobody had thought of checks.
Seersucker, David.
Yeah.
I've never felt qualified to wear it in the past. I always thought you had to carry an American passport to wear seersucker.
The shoulders are very unconstructed seersucker jacket.
I researched it out. It turns out, Dave, the fabric, the most American of fabrics, British Empire fabric, British colonialists, well done colonialists, in the Indian Raj.
Yeah.
And they named it after the Hindu bastardization of the Persian phrase Shurashaka.
Uh-huh.
Which refers, as you know, from your Hindi language mastery.
Big time.
To, I think, milk and sugar, which refers to the bumps.
Yeah.
Of the I love this fabric. It's the first time I'd ever seen seersucker, Davo.
Yeah.
I was going on a date with a woman in Louisiana, and we were lining up for the movies, and the gentleman in front of me had on the seersucker jacket.
Was this in Liverpool or Louisiana?
Louisiana.
Okay.
The Liverpool of America.
Yeah.
There was a man in front of me. He had on the seersucker jacket and seersucker short combo, which you would probably wear.
I
could never get
shorts,
away with
but
that.
I wouldn't wear matching shorts with a... Okay, go ahead.
I'd never seen a fabric like it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help myself but just involuntarily put my hand out.
You touched another man's jacket.
I started to just stroke his back.
Uh-huh.
It was the
How
first,
did your date feel about
it's
that?
It's the first and last date that I ever went on with this woman.
Yeah,
but I feel
surprising.
When I think back to that date that I never went out with her again, yet my love of the fabric more than compensated for a loss, Davo. I am praying, because it is the most American fabric, I am praying that it comes with citizenship forms attached when
it returns. Like, it feels like Southern lawyer. I recently had some legal issues going on in the South, Rog. And my lawyer's name is Custis Byers. I love that name, Custis Byers. And I never met Custis
Byers.
Probably
not his real name.
But
like
I believe that Custis Byers potentially wears seersucker. It would just be my guess.
I bet you his real name is something like Reg Dwight. I need to
Custis.
Changed it.
Custis.
Oh, Davo, tell you what else I did in my desperation.
Yeah.
I went to my first NYCFC game.
Oh, you didn't tell me this.
Up to Yankee Stadium.
I gave producer Jen Simons my tickets, Rog.
Oh, I was in a box.
Oh.
I was in a box next door to Joe Hart and David Silver, who are Vincent Company, who were probably thinking about their next move after City. They're probably going to start playing second base for the Yankees. I bet David Silver could hit better than 160.
NYCFC drew the game, Roger. They got a point.
It's an amazing atmosphere.
Yeah.
An amazing, genuine. I was blown away. They used the third rail on Mad Keen, the supporters group, and they used the fan cam in a remarkably...
Down there at the end.
...thoughtful way that reinforces the growing passion around the club. Big news today for you. One Spanish news outlet, AS, reporting that Andrea Pirlo has accepted an offer to play for NYC FC after the Champions League. Must be giving you the thickening.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't even know that yet, Rog.
I think it would be unbelievable for MLS. Dear God, the God who dispatched Sepp Blatter, please make Pirlo to NYCFC be true.
Pirlo, the English muffin, and Mix in the NYCFC midfield.
Yeah, at Marcale tweeted to us, too much handsome for one team, at Mix Discarude, at Andrea Pirlo.
He's probably right. He's a handsome man, Rog.
Talking to more important American sports than our lesser one, fringe one, Blazers. Blazing news. Congratulations to all GFOPs in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
With the news that UAB President Ray Watts announced He's bringing your football programme back in 2016. It's not too expensive after all. I've always been very fond of the UAB Blazers.
Yeah.
When they take the field, they're the only watchable Blazers programme in the world of sports. Welcome back, lads.
Very good, Rog. Okay, we got a packed show. We're going to enter our second day of celebrations over news that Seth Blatter, Rog, will resign as FIFA president. Anyway,
the Time magazine headline right now is Seth Blatter may have outmaneuvered the FBI. Seth Blatter. It's catching on.
We also sojourn into the world of actual football as we break down Arsenal's 4-0 drubbing of Tim Sherwood's Aston Villa in the FA crap final. And we're joined by US football legend and Golden Blazer recipient Super Judy Foudy to preview all things Women's World Cup. And we've got a big Men in Blazers announcement, Rog.
Are we having a baby?
No, we're not having a baby. We're not having a baby. Although, do you want a baby, Rog? Do you want another baby?
I would love a baby.
Should we have a Men in Blazers baby?
Oh, I'd love a baby. I'd like to say, if we never imagined there could be a world without a Seth Blatter.
Yeah.
And if we didn't imagine that, just think what America will do next.
What would a combined Rog-Davo baby be like?
I think it would have incredible hair, just despite us.
Okay, to the football, Rog.
Oh.
What is the sound of that Guinness?
It's the sound of democracy and freedom. American democracy, American freedom, American Guinness. To a post-Seth Blatter world, David.
And also, a little bit of thanks to Ireland for the Guinness as well, Rog. Okay, to the football. We start with the latest from FIFA land, Rog. I wonder if they'll rewrite the anthem now.
Well, we've got some suggestions coming up from our GFOPs who've been sending them in by the thousand.
Several media outlets, including the New York Times, ABC News and Reuters, Rog, report that US law enforcement officials are investigating Sepp Blatter, and we assume Seth Blatter as well. That news comes after Blatter announced his impending resignation as FIFA president yesterday. This morning, US Attorney General Loretta Lynch refused to comment.
Can we just say that again?
U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch.
I love her. By the way, great American.
FIFA president, maybe? We could see.
We'll talk about it.
Refused to comment on whether Blatter could be charged. She refused to comment, Rog. Meanwhile, Interpol, they actually exist, the world's largest police organization, today issued wanted notices for two former senior FIFA officials.
Were they wanted notices or red cards?
Yeah, and four corporate executives. One of those FIFA officials, CONCACAF's own Jack Warner. We're so proud in the CONCACAF region. He's accused of accepting bribes in connection with South Africa 2010 and not understanding that The Onion is a satirical newspaper.
Guilty!
Guilty.
Oh, your questions have poured in after yesterday's suboptimal bye-bye bladder podcast. At FC Bonano wants to know, question remains, does Loretta Lynch have Valerian steel, dragon glass or both? Hashtag Loretta for the night's watch. Davo, what a couple of weeks. I'm still totally, I don't know what I'm in emotional turmoil still.
Yeah.
Mostly because I met Charlie Rose a lot.
Yeah, you did. You spent a lot of time with Charlie. He's a lovely man, though, Charlie Rose. One of my favourites.
Can I talk about him for one
second? Yeah, go ahead.
I think he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's an American hero. Mm-hmm. To work as hard as he does.
Yeah.
He does the morning show.
Yeah.
He does 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
He does his own shows.
Yeah.
He does the nightly news this week. He's doing the nightly news also. He's a human phenomenon.
Yeah. But he also socialises. You see him out.
All the time.
I have mutual friends of Charlie's. And every time I go out anywhere around where they are, Charlie's there, always there, always friendly, always has caught up in everything in the world. He's one of these guys that knows something about everything. There is nothing in the world.
He's the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. We know nothing about something very specific. He knows something about everything, Rog.
When he interviews you on the Charlie Rose show, he speaks to his producers in his microphone between links.
Yeah.
So you're chatting to him 1 second and then he'll just shout, "Let's hurry! I've got to go out for lunch with Nancy Pelosi!" And you'll be chatting to him more and stuff, and then he'll just shout, "I need my running shoes! I need my running shoes!" And we talk FIFA, and after the interview, he asked me, I don't know if I should say this.
Yeah.
Tell me if I should say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
He just goes, at the end he goes, "That was good. Are you single?" And before I could answer, he tried to play matchmaker by showing me a magazine cover and suggesting that he introduce me to the Hollywood actress / businesswoman on the cover.
Not Nancy Pelosi. I could see you and Nancy would be a wonderful couple, Rog.
I'm way above.
Who was the actress businesswoman on the cover?
I can't tell you who she was.
Why not?
But I just
which magazine
she,
is it?
She dodged a bullet that she didn't get set with me.
Producer Jay does pull me all magazines with Hollywood actresses / businesswomen on the cover.
So we had a quick chat post interview, and then his running shoes appear in the hands of an assistant. And
is it B. Arthur?
He just slammed. Oh God, I'd love that. I'd love that. No, it was Dana Plato, if you must know. He slaps him on.
Yeah.
And just poof, he was gone, jogging off to lunch with Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
That is the life, Dave. That is the life of a great American.
It really, really is.
When we're talking about great people in the media, we've got to talk about Andrew Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, amazing man. 71-year-old journalist.
Yeah.
Spent the last 15 years dedicating his life to exposing FIFA and Sepp Blatter. Sepp Blatter and FIFA have spent the last 15 years of their life trying to expose him as a crazy crackpot conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
How must he be feeling this morning? The Washington Post ran a massive feature on him. They said the best way for Americans to imagine Andrew Jennings is to roll Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein together. It's a bit like imagining you and me having a baby.
Yeah.
He's been doing the media rounds. There's an amazing interview in the Australian media when he talks about meeting the FBI finally for the first time. He talks about how he just goes to a meeting. He doesn't know who he's meeting with. But he says there's all these very serious looking Americans with broad shoulders. They look like they were Marines, so don't mess with them. Then he laughs. They were very polite. They gave me their business cards. I looked at it. It said Federal Plaza, New York, Eurasian Organized Crime Squad.
Oh.
Beep, beep, beep. He just says bliss. What a life well lived, Andrew Jennings. A lot of what we are riding on today is your work. Have a look at his website. Transparencyinsport.org, an amazing, amazing, amazing human being. Slightly less amazing, David, Russian World Cup committee.
Yeah.
Today put out a press release saying they respect Sepp Blatter's, quote, enormous contribution.
Yeah. How much was the contribution? That was the first thing. How many rubles was the contribution?
That's the kind of language a charity uses to thank a major donor.
Yeah.
Which in many aspects is fitting metaphor. If the charity was fat white guys lining their pockets at the trough of international football, Putin doing everything he can to quickly make sure 2018 Russia is not in the conversation about being revoked.
Now, every time you say Putin, all I see is hockey player and flashing graphic.
Are you talking about, professional ice hockey player / sometimes global terrormonger?
But he's played it brilliantly. Russia have played this brilliantly. They've virtually ensured that the 2018 World Cup will go ahead in Russia as planned.
By Rob Stone.
as purchased, as fixed.
By the way,
as
I think Rob
ordained.
Stone, have you watched The Americans?
Yeah.
I've been watching it, the first series.
Yeah.
I think Rob Stone may be a Russian.
Sleeper agent.
Sleeper agent.
Yeah.
I've got to think some more on that one.
It's possible. The Russians have legs that skinny. That's the question. I think the Russians have slightly fuller legs. But he could be a sleeper agent.
I think that's Rob Stone's genius. The KGB realised, they said, we must make legs skinny like weak American. He had an operation.
Yeah.
To lose that. 2022 Qatar, though, Davo, another matter completely.
We love you, Rob Stone.
Sweetly, beautifully, Australia making little noises.
Yeah.
We were really kind of shafted. The US also starting to position themselves.
Australians do not make little noises. It is not a little noise-making nation. Australians make big noises, mate, or they don't make any noises at all.
A lot of noises coming out of Africa this morning.
Yeah.
Thinking about the old mountain goat, which is what Sepp Blatter called himself last week.
Yeah.
Sierra Leone FA President Isha Johansson. Really fascinating hearing the African comments. They said, as most of the African nations do, I looked upon Sepp Blatter as a father figure. He's been good for the African continent. He's been good for African football growth. We take him as one of us, as family. That is fascinating and a real reinforcement of the other POV, the non-Anglo, the non-European POV, as Sepp Blatter, not as a corrupt little Bond villain, but as a freedom fighter who has, and he has, Davo, under his game. Yes, there's been corruption, nefarious skullduggery and ill-doing, but the game has truly become global. And I know today the Sierra Leone FA are not the only ones mourning Sepp's passing.
Yeah, although let's not get out of control with how much the game has globalised. It's not like the game domestically in any of these countries is super strong. Yes, their players are travelling and going playing in the elite leagues all over the world, and certainly these teams are showing much better in international competitions. But yes, of course, he's like a father. Fathers are usually, wealthy fathers are usually the only people who give you money, give money to their sons when they've absolutely done nothing at all to deserve it yet. So I think a lot of people have got very rich in Africa, or a few people have got very rich. I'm unsure as to whether the state of the game is really much improved.
Other quotes, Greg Dyke, the head of the English Football Association. If I was the Qatari organisers, I wouldn't sleep very well tonight.
Yeah.
Which led to Qatar responding, oh, God, did they burn him?
Oh, yes. We would urge Mr. Dyke to let the legal process take its course and concentrate on delivering his promise to build an England team capable of winning the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. Although, to be fair to Greg Dyke, it would take a team of robots who I'm not sure any human team is capable of winning a World Cup in Qatar in that heat, Rog.
Other responses today, most fascinatingly of all, from the sponsors. I'm saying Visa put out the longest statement of the World Cup sponsors, concluding that it's great that Blatter has resigned. FIFA will undergo a, quote, profound overhaul. This is a significant first step towards rebuilding public trust, but more work lies ahead. A watered-down version of what I imagine Sepp Blatter spent the weekend hearing when he did his roundup of major sponsors and heard their dark news. We've thought a lot about why Sepp on Friday was the president of the world, and why now he's the president of nothing. We thought maybe he spent the weekend soul-searching, didn't we, David? Yeah. Asking himself the hardest possible questions a human...
Head on his pillow, looking up, thinking, what is the best thing for football?
Yeah.
What is the best thing for football? Would it be that I continue to be the president?
What are my weaknesses?
Should I resign and start leading a fundamental reform of FIFA, resign.
Why do they hate me? So let me think about that. He either did that.
Because maybe they're right to hate me. Maybe they're right to not trust me.
Yeah, maybe he did listen to Joel Osteen over the weekend and just had a complete change of heart.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe he spent the weekend speaking to Visa, to McDonald's, to
Murdoch, to Fox,
to Coca-Cola. People seem to laugh when I say Coca-Cola, but that's what we called it in England.
Yeah.
And kind of got the little elbow that they should be pushing himself towards the moon door. You would not know he's just fallen out of the moon door by
or
what happened.
Perhaps he knows what's going on at the FBI and that there are, you know, more serious charges to come against him imminently.
Or maybe he read a John le Carré novel this morning and realised, holy crap, this FBI thing, they can bring some. By the way, today he turned up for work at FIFA as normal and arrived. And Paul Kelso, the great English journalist, tweeted, Sepp Blatter received a 10-minute standing ovation from FIFA staff when he arrived and addressed them at the Zurich headquarters.
So isn't this the problem? That FIFA remains FIFA. FIFA remains constructed under its rules, Rog, in exactly the same way. Its rules, which means that it can't have another FIFA Congress to elect a new president until December at the earliest, it seems. Well, FIFA is exactly the same. It's not a professionally run organisation. It's not a charity. It's not doesn't have a board that oversees its actions. It is just, it's constructed in a way that is not only ruthlessly inefficient, it's just ruthless and it's corrupt. And I don't see how they can affect enough change to make it any different.
It puts the FIFA in fiefdom.
Yeah.
Is the honest truth. By the way, when I read Paul Kelso's tweet, I did make a little note to myself in my diary. I wonder if Hitler's staff clapped him into the bunker with Eva Braun.
Yeah.
Some nights I lie awake, Davo, and think that no one knows where his body is today, Davo. It really, really troubles me.
Do you think it might be sort of like that Eddie Murphy movie, like in the head of Sepp Blatter?
No, I meant Hitler, not Sepp Blatter.
No, meaning that Hitler's body, a little Hitler, is just in his head, pulling the strings.
I'm open to all. I don't shut my mind
perhaps
to any possibility.
Perhaps responsible for some of the self-reflection.
But the big question is, Davo, what does it mean, you've asked it, for FIFA, that the staff are clapping, that 133 delegates voted for Sepp Blatter, knowing everything that was going down. You've already drawn the right... I mean, it's still a mock with pork, corruption, racketeering. I mean, it makes Jack Nicholson's Chinatown seem like a force for good. And that's what I'm thinking today. The demise of Sepp Blatter, the slow demise, because he's not going anywhere. He's being applauded by his staff upon arrival. It's not an end. There's the possibility of a new beginning. But it needs new faces, transparency, checks and balances, accountability, a new leader. We need a Calvin Coolidge, David.
Checks and balances. Do you think that's something that's ever been said in Switzerland
checks,
at FIFA headquarters?
Probably. Checks. Checks a lot.
Balances. And bank balances, maybe, but nothing else. No other checks and balances.
Spoke to a source in FIFA, David.
Oh, I like it.
Told me, please don't be naive. Sepp Blatter has stayed on to kingmake his successor. This is very much business as usual at FIFA. He will anoint the man that follows him. Who will that be?
Is this source the same woman, actress, businesswoman that's on the cover of a certain national magazine right now?
I can't confirm nor deny, David, that very it's good. Kathy Bates.
Okay. Don't know who it's going to be, Rog.
Well, favourite, Prince Ali.
Yeah.
Michel Platini, please God, no.
Yeah.
David Gill of England, formerly of Manchester United. All the usual suspects, to be honest. Anyone who's involved in FIFA right now, I do think of as tarnished by the muck to have risen through the ranks. Issa Hayatou being mentioned, the president of the African Football Confederation since 1988, Blatter Redux. The Kuwaiti Sheikh Ahmad Al Fahad Al Sabah, a powerful player in the International Olympic Committee. That's really what I want on the resume of the successor. Another Blatter loyalist. What about John Oliver, David?
He's quite busy. He's got a very successful TV show on HBO.
John Stewart's
available. He is available.
Here's another one for you.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
He's already shown he can run a slightly dodgy, morally murky grey foundation.
I'm not sure that they haven't taken a bunch of corrupt money from FIFA already, Rog.
That'd be perfect then. David, can I say this? I would love a woman to be Blatter's successor. How great would it be if the next president of FIFA was a woman, or in Sepp Blatter lingo, a lady?
I just think in that incredibly sexist organisation, a woman isn't going to stand a chance.
Well, when the first female was voted onto FIFA's executive committee in 2013, former Burundi FA president Lydia Nskera, Sepp Blatter said publicly, "Say something, ladies! You are always speaking at home! Now you can speak here!"
Yeah.
I'd love a lady, David. Julie Foudy.
Yeah.
Loretta Lynch.
We are wearing Foudy for President pins right now on our chests.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of Americans are, David.
Only because she beat Bob Lee in our imaginary knife fight in order to win our support.
If I can't have you, I don't want nobody, baby. That will be the campaign theme song.
Yeah.
Fire up the bandwagon.
Yeah. Very good.
Yaron Skabur, USA always shows up a little late, but when they do, they show up and save the day. Yep, that is so true. Since 1776, you have a history of giving dictators the boot, and Dave O and I love you for it, America. At El Scar tweeted us to say, everyone's congratulating the FBI and the New York Times for Blatter's exit, but it was Pelé's praise that buried Sepp, like Freddie Adu's career.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned 1776 because I'm doing colonial history with one of my children right now. Declaration of Independence, 1776. Surrender of Cornwallis at Yorktown, Rog, 1781. Treaty of Paris, 1783. Washington becomes first US president, 1789. It can take quite a long time from the first moves of democracy in order to have it actually instilled.
God, so I've been looking at Calvin Coolidge's presidency when he took over from a very corrupt president, and what new leadership can do and what new leadership can't do, David.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this, FIFA needs a Washington.
Yeah, very true. Rog, our FIFA lyrics contest. We want to announce the winners, our FIFA lyrics contest. We asked you to pen new lyrics to FIFA's anthem. As you'll recall, ours were, let's embezzle the money, get apartments for all of our cats. Winners will receive a Men in Blazers victory enhancement kit, which includes an American States United snapback
by Mitchell and Ness
from the GFOPs at Mitchell and Ness. Both Mitchell and Ness were both involved equally in the creation of said items. The winners are Amanda Bowe. Her entry, Bowe spelled B-O-E.
I love America.
It's a lovely, lovely American name, Roger. Amanda Bowe, her entry, World Cup in Qatar, basically hell on earth, but at least I'm a man, so I don't have to play on turf. I think that's very, very, very good. Jessica Farmer, love to see the ladies. Seem to be doing so many
entries.
You can
speak at home.
Jessica Farmer actually sent us a recording of her song. It included the lyrics, hail noble FIFA, pure as yellow snow. You say racketeering, we say tomato. I like that one too. And Philippe Monfiston, whose lyrics included references to eunuchs spanning FIFA officials. Rog.
You know what floats our boat, Philippe.
Oh, we love eunuchs fanning officials. Congratulations, all of you. Rog, onto the FA crap. Arsenal 4, Aston Villa 0. Well, from one team. Arsenal become the most successful club in FA Cup history, winning the trophy in what has almost, I said almost, become an annual event. This year, they bludgeoned Tim Sherwood and Aston Villa at Wembley. Goals from Theo Walcott, Alexis Sanchez, Per Mertesacker and Olivier Giroud see the Gunners win their 12th FA Cup, one more than Manchester United. And suddenly, in Arsenal land, Rog, everything is okay.
One hand on the form team,
one hand on the Premier League title for next season.
Can I say, the thing I hate most about Sepp Blatter is that he ruined the FA crap for me.
He did.
Which is already pretty ruined itself. But I couldn't have been less bothered, Dave, in the run-up. I felt dirty returning to football when everything was going down in Zurich.
Yeah.
And the only football question that seemed pertinent to me was, how was Stevie G spending his birthday? I imagine there's probably been worse birthdays. Molly Ringwald, 16 candles. Yeah. Maud's 80th birthday and Harold and Maud didn't work out so well. But a birthday I think probably most equates to Stevie G's is that of Moses. The one, both men, venerated leaders of a chosen people.
I thought you were talking about Victor Moses.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the lesser Moses.
Okay,
Moses.
Yeah.
Moses led the Israelites. Stevie G led the Liverpoolians. Moses wandered barrenly around the wilderness for 40 years, making Stevie G's 17 years look like early release for good behaviour. Moses died on his 120th birthday, David.
Yeah.
But the parallel to Stevie G's...
That must have been a shock. It didn't. To everyone.
What?
You never saw that
coming.
Too young to die.
But the parallel to Stevie G, the land he'd long dreamt of but couldn't enter, Davo, obviously a thinly veiled metaphor for the Premier League title.
Yeah.
And then he died at the age of 120.
Yeah.
And his body has never been found. Similarity with Stevie G is eerie.
Mm-hmm.
Segue into Arsenal.
That's the second body never been found reference. It was also Hitler.
Very different people, Davo. Very, very different people.
Yeah, Arsenal, impressive. You have to say, it's the kind of football that has forced a sale season. Arsenal are capable of playing the best football in England. Theo Walcott returns. He's been electrifying, sparkling since he's come back into this team, as you noted, in a contract year.
Big tactical issue for Arsenal at the beginning of the game. Theo Walcott starting up front ahead of Olivier Giroud.
Yeah.
Hoping to use his pace against what Wenger rightly anticipated to be an incredibly high Aston Villa backline. Tim Sherwood's biggest tactical decision of the day was apparently to go with the skinny tie.
Yeah.
I love the pre-game. Prince William. I'm no royalist, Dave. He's a big Aston Villa fan.
Yeah.
But mostly I feel for him, not just because of the problems in Sectors 3.4.
Oh, the whole of Sector 3, Rog. There isn't a single point in Sector 3 that he's not having problems.
But when I look at him, Dave, to be age 32 and have no apparent purpose in life, I ache for him.
Well, he's going to be the King of England one day, Rog.
One day.
It might be at the age of 120.
One day.
But he is going to be the King of England.
He would have enjoyed the first 10 minutes.
And he is a helicopter rescue pilot. Let's not forget about the noble work he does rescuing people in his helicopter, Rog.
When BBC film cameras are there.
Oh, you are so
He cynical. Would have enjoyed the first 10 minutes of this game. It was Aston Villa's best spell. They just decided to kick the crap out of Alexis.
Like over you rescue
and
someone
over
in your helicopter.
And over again. It was a battle between Arsenal's speed, skill, ideas and confidence, a word we don't use with Arsenal enough, versus Aston Villa's ability to kick them in the down belows. I mean, Villa were like a dam that was perpetually close to bursting. Only an amazing block off the line by Kieran Richardson, the first Bravosi international to play FA Cup final football, kept them in the game. Santi Cazorla, intelligent, Mesut Ozil all over the ball, and Jack Grealish, boy wonder, could barely conjure a touch.
Socks around his ankles.
Yeah, but he looked a lot more Irish than he did English suddenly, David.
He's got that decision.
There was an odd stat that came out right at the beginning of the game. Someone released a photocopy of the kind of riders for the teams, what they request in the locker room. Aston Villa requested crates of beer or champagne. Then win or lose, it said. Win or lose. Arsenal, beer and champagne, only if they won, David. That's how you motivate. That's how you motivate these little Smurfs.
Yeah, Wenger has finally learned, Rog.
And he finally was paid off for his Theo Walcott selection in the 40th minute. Cocklin with a pass. Sanchez, a fantastic header across the face of goal, where many would have directed it towards the net. And Theo with a smash. Brad Guzan would have saved it, wouldn't he, David?
Yeah, inevitably.
Shea Given's hair. The man with the greatest widow peak in world football. Suddenly magicked a flick fringe.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure was hair extensions. He had no chance with the second. That's Sanchez's strike.
Yeah, no, he's... what a season, Alexis Sanchez. First season in the Premier League. Probably haven't spoken about him enough ever since he ripped off his shirt and showed us his amazing, amazing abs earlier in the season, Rog. What a phenomenal season he's had in the Premier League.
His little nipples are like burned into my retina.
Really?
But this was a thriller from Charlie Adam range. Chairman Mao once invested a fortune in table tennis in the 1960s, fortune mm-hmm. which ended up in world dominance. And he instructed his players to, quote, regard a ping pong ball as a head of your capitalist enemy. Uh-huh. He said, hit it with your socialist bat. You will win a point for the fatherland. Sanchez, he hit that ball as if it was the head of his capitalist enemy.
Yeah, he totally joinked it, Rog.
Brad Guzan never looked better. The nipple-tingling quality of the strike was so healing. After 4 days of being blattered, football made me love again. I leapt out the chair. I howled at the moon as given. Didn't even get a hand to it, David. Brad Guzan would have at least got the hand onto it as it would have knocked his fingers backwards and then plopped into the net. Villa tried to get forward, get more out of the game, leaving themselves ever more vulnerable. Arsenal had 25 attempts on goal.
Amazing.
Villa, 2 shots on goal, one at the beginning, one at the end, both feebly blocked. Per Mertesacker schooled Christian Benteke. Koscielny stole his thunder during that goal by having his shirt yanked over his head in the most beautiful fashion. And then Walcott for Giroud. David, what have you got to say about those frosted tips?
Oh, I love a frosted tip, Rog. I love it. It's a little bit old school.
It did.
Yeah.
It was very, 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 and I say this as a compliment, it was very Kajagoogoo.
Yeah.
Oni strolled to get a goal and prove to Wenger that maybe his tactics were not so right after all. It was a low-stress day for Arsene Wenger, Dave. I spent the second half wondering, were Arsenal that good or Aston Villa that bad?
I think a little bit of both. This is typical for Arsenal. Great performances in what, I know it's an FA Cup final, but it's pretty much a pressureless, meaningless game for them. Most exciting thing about this, Rog, is the Community Shield, first game of the season. Arsenal versus Chelsea, Rog, now. It means that often meaningless game is going to be thrilling to see.
A lot of people have said Aston Villa should just take pride on getting to Wembley for a final. I can tell you, having gone to a final with Everton against Chelsea, in which Louis Saha scored after 28 seconds, a record, and I knew Everton were doomed as soon as the ball hit the back of the net. Dictionary definition, too early. People always say you enjoy the day out at Wembley. You don't. A loss, take it from me, is absolutely crushing. Congratulations, Arsenal and their fans. It was impossible to defend against that kind of footballing intelligence. And after 4 days enmeshed in the FIFA debacle, it was massive relief to get back to football. Well done, Arsene. You became the joint most successful manager in FA Cup history with 6 trophies. And bad luck, I guess, to the real losers, Southampton, who are now going to be in the Europa League next season. It is a curse. Everyone now talking about Arsenal Premier League contenders next season, Davo. Is that conversation going on in the Davis house?
I don't know. It's just tough for me to see how they're going to be better than Manchester City, Manchester United and Chelsea next season after the money that it's clear that all of those teams are going to go and spend in the off-season.
They'll need to bring in a world-class striker, cast-iron reliable goalkeeper and a good defender. The jump in logic from the FA Cup victory, which was beautiful to watch, and them being champions next season, is such a massive one, Dave. I mean, you've got to ask, do they have the mental ability to lead the league and not crack under the pressure? Mm-hmm. What will Wenger do with all of his excuses if that happens?
Okay, Rog, well, talking of the Premier League, some Premier League news this week. Just a week after scoring in the 2-0 win over West Ham that secured Newcastle's safety on the final day of the season, the Magpies released Jonas Gutierrez. Gutierrez, who beat testicular cancer this year, had been at the club since 2008. Gutierrez kept them in the Premier League, Rog.
Yeah, heroism, not what it used to be. The ultimate story in football as a business. He tweeted, 2 things I learned from my illness. How you can support a player, Newcastle fans. How you leave a player alone, Newcastle's owner. He said, referring to the truly skullduggerous Mike Ashley.
In transfer news, Rog, lots of it lighting up the English papers right now, Rog. Liverpool are set to hold talks with Manchester City and England midfielder James Milner. Hopefully Milner's zit is also involved in this transfer, Rog. Milner, who joined City from Villa in 2010, is currently out of contract. Saw him potentially as an Everton player as well, Rog.
He's a great signing. He's going to charge around, work hard at both ends of the field. Him running around besides Jordan Henderson may make that the most earnest midfield duo in Premier League history. And though Jordan Henderson's not going to be too pleased this morning to read Jamie Carragher writing, James Milner potential Liverpool captain.
Yeah, I saw that, Rog. Dark days at Leicester Football Club, Rog. After a sparkling end of the season run that saw them pull off Premier League survival, the club is now investigating a racist sex tape involving three players. The Sunday Mirror obtained the footage. One can only think how. Which was purportedly shot during Leicester's tour of Thailand. I believe that's a friendship tour of Thailand.
Tom Hopper, Adam Smith, James Pearson.
Yeah, one of the players, Nigel Pearson's son, James Pearson, as you mentioned, Roger.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrible film. I mean, they're spread-eagled, and I do mean spread-eagled on a bed. All the players, I mean, it's just dreadful. It's gruesome. And they, frankly, knowing foot, not that surprising. Their sexual mores of footballers are very shore-leave sailor. What's amazing to me is they shoot videos thinking, these will never get out there, Davey.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they want to get caught. Say about Leicester, 36% of the city is of Asian descent. It's one of the most ethnically diverse cities in England. Since the 1970s, and this is one of my top English city stories of all time, Uganda's Idi Amin announced every Asian in Uganda had 90 days to leave the country. Leicester City Council launched a campaign to dissuade them for some reason, doing an advertising campaign in Uganda saying, you should not move to Leicester, Asians. The advertising campaign backfired. Is it the only impact it had was to make Asians aware that Leicester existed and they all moved there, David. I'd love to know. Nigel Pearson's conversations with his son must have been very Roose Bolton talking to Ramsey, but even scarier.
I have no idea what that would be, Rog.
Can I, very quickly, Everton. Andy
King,
one of Everton's most popular, charismatic players of the 1970s, died of a heart attack at the age of 58. If you love it, I had his poster above my bed.
A great player.
For the first 10 years of my life. He scored the winning goal in a derby against Liverpool in 1978. First victory Everton had in my lifetime. There's a remarkable long interview with Andy King on the magical Everton fan site Toffee Web. It's beautiful, about old school footballers, how they drank, how they gambled. And I think about his goal on an almost daily basis. He will be missed.
US men's national team. They're busy preparing for two European friendlies. This Friday, they play the Netherlands in Amsterdam. 5 days later, they take on World Cup champs Germany in Köln.
A squad without star strikers Dempsey and Josie Altidore. A midfield without Alejandro Bedoya. No Jeff Cameron, Omar Gonzalez or Matt Besler at the back line. It is a young squad.
No Jermaine Jones, Rog.
8 of the 22 players have 10 caps or fewer. I think that would be 9 now. Jordan Morris, Stanford Messi has turned up. Massive opportunity for Aaron Johansson to show his worth. And Brad Guzan, hashtag pray for Guzan. It's going to be very interesting, although it's going to be fascinating to see how motivated Germany and Netherlands are after long, long seasons.
Yeah, this Friday's game against the Netherlands is at 2:30 Eastern time on ESPN. June 10th game in Deutschland is set for 2:45 p.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 1. The US Under-20 World Cup, Rog, congratulations to the US Under-20 team. They're headed for the knockout stages of the Under-20 World Cup. They've won their first two group games, 2-1 against Myanmar and 4-0 against the hosts, New Zealand. They have still to play Ukraine Friday before knockout rounds begin.
Oh, let the Gedeon Zelalem hype train begin.
Yeah.
Rubio Rubin scored twice. Emerson Hinderman and Paul Areola, an unfortunately named football player, got the others. Zelalem, an assist, one delicious Rabona, but he ran the game. GFOP Nick Christie wrote in to say, you need to do an emergency Gedeon Zelalem podcast after his under 20 performance yesterday. I've had an erection longer than 4 hours and I should probably consult a doctor.
That's a spider. Now, Rog, to US soccer's main event of the summer, the World Cup, Rog. It's something our guest today knows a little bit about. Rog, you spoke with Super Julie Foudy.
Our guest today, four-time World Cup veteran, two-time champion. She also has two Olympic gold medals. We welcome to the pod a box-to-box midfielder with more than 270 caps and 45 goals for the USA, a phenomenal broadcaster, and the worthy recipient of this year's Golden Blazer. Welcome back to the pod, the one and only Julie Foudy.
Hello, Rog.
Oh, Julie, calling us from Connecticut. We are going to talk Women's World Cup with you. We actually call it the World Cup, and the other one that you and I covered last year in Brazil, we call that one the Men's World Cup. But before we dive in, question one. from an eager nation. Will you, Julie Foudy, run for FIFA president?
Absolutely.
First step. First step to change, to rooting out corruption. Loretta Lynch. Can you describe the feelings? Can you describe the feelings you experience watching a woman kick ass in the world of football?
I know. It's so great too when you think about really for 2 decades now, various entities have been trying to bring down FIFA. And not only is it an American entity, it's a woman. Bless her soul. I want to give her a big hug. See her.
The Women's World Cup. Poised for kickoff, Julie Foudy. Right next door, in Canada, north of the wall. Let's start at the beginning. The United States. Drawn in the group of death, Group D, includes the US, Nigeria, the best team in Africa, Sweden, fifth in the world, and the Matildas. The Matildas of Australia, 10th in the FIFA rankings. Coming into the tournament, Jill Ellis' side. They've been less than overwhelming, Julie, in their final tune-up games. Alex Morgan, injured. The players keep talking how they're not favourites. A US team that is not a favourite going into the World Cup is a strange beast. Can you give us an honest assessment of just how good this team is and what their weaknesses are?
I think this team, first off, is as deep a US team as I've ever seen. So you have that. And especially with an extra game this year with the expanded World Cup field, I think that will play huge in the 6th, 7th game if they can get that far, which I think they can. But I think their area of concern that I'm seeing, in especially in that last send-off game, is you have a solid back line. You have Hope Solo, who seems to have turned a corner and is playing well. But that front six is just having some issues connecting. And part of it is Alex Morgan is out, injured. Part of it is maybe, you know, Abby Wambach is 35 now and carrying a lot of weight on her shoulders still, but they haven't had any chemistry with that front pairing playing in that 4-4-2, and it shows. And no one really of that younger group who has said, look, I'm gonna grab hold of this moment and show I belong in that starting lineup. And so you see a little bit disjointed, out of rhythm, choppy play from the U.S. as of late. But I still think, given their depth and given the talent we've seen, even though they're not playing to their full potential, they have the personnel to win it all.
Well, what do you think the old guard in that squad, Abby, Hope Solo, Rampone, the players for whom this is really the last chance to win a World Cup, they've strived so hard. They've won Olympics. They've not won the World Cup. They so desperately want to bring that back to the United States. You've been on squads, Julie. What do you think the old guard are saying to that new guard right now after the lackluster run of send-off games?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you saw the bite that Abby said recently, which was, look, you know, I'm ready to essentially pass the mantle on to this younger guard and have them be recognized by the public for all the great things they're doing, but they got to step up. They got to show me they want that. And I get it. I mean, it's a lot of these younger kids going into their first World Cup, a lot of pressure in terms of attention on the team and popularity with the team, big crowds. I mean, each of those sell-off games were almost 30,000 sold out, those send-off games. But there has to be, and I agree with her, because I think it's asking too much of that old guard. Abby is 35. Rampone, if she comes off the bench, is going to be turning 40 at the World Cup. Carly Lloyd in her 30s. Hope Solo in her 30s. I mean, so you have an older guard that you just can't rely on entirely to carry the load. And no one yet, for me, has stepped up and said, okay, I'm going to grab this by the scruff of the neck.
We talk a lot about stepping up. Who do you look at that in that squad and think, this person needs to step up if the United States are going to go deep?
Right. I think particularly that front line, right? So, well, I'll start there. I think you look at a Kristen Press, who has all the tools to be an excellent striker. We've seen her at both the collegiate level and the professional level, you know, take over and score at will. And yet she's played in all nine games in 2015, started eight of them, and only has one goal to her name this calendar year. So I think a player like that has to find the game, has to step up, because she has the potential to do it, and could be a huge impact player with Alex Morgan out. I think another one who we've seen, again, in glimpses is Sydney Leroux, who...
I love Sydney Leroux. She's my favorite Canadian.
Favorite Canadian, right. How about that Sports Illustrated cover, by the way?
She is like she's like American Diego Costa. She's one of ours now.
So she, you know, she has a ton of upside as well, but is coming off injury and just getting fully fit again. But I love that she's scrappy and she'll create chances when you don't think she's going to create them. And now the last piece of her puzzle is just finishing those off. So those are two up front that I think will have to have big moments in this World Cup. And then, to me, really, Lauren Holliday, who sits in the middle of the field for the United States and really is their playmaking engine. Here's a gal who can play the perfect puppeteer when she's got, you know, when she's got support around her. But right now, I just think they're asking her to defend too much.
Question from one of our listeners, at Sir Yves Touron. If you were coach Julie Foudy, you're not coach because you're going to be running for FIFA president. I want to make that clear to everybody. Who would the two starting US strikers be in that first game?
Well, you're not going to have Alex Morgan healthy. So I actually have the two. I actually went to, if I could do my ultimate lineup, I would do three starting strikers. So I'd put Rapinoe, Abby.
Mia Hamm.
Mia Hamm, yes. Diego Costa.
Sydney Leroux. God. I try and dream of glory for America entering any World Cup. I try and banish all dark thoughts, which is not easy for me. But is there a dark scenario in your mind? When we said you were coming on the show, a lot of our listeners said, you've got to ask Julie, is there a dark scenario? Our German friends have a word for it. They love darkness. Gotterdammerung! Where the United States wilt in the group stage and exit with a whimper.
Will they exit out of the group stage? It's not going to be that dark, Roger.
Oh, thank God.
Don't lose sleep over that. No, they're going to get out of the. They're going to get out of the group. Come on, you get three teams out of this group. If they don't get out of this group, then we got major issues. Good Lord.
But I read that you wrote they will come second, which will be a tough road, less rest, and possible matchups against Brazil in the round of 16 in Japan in the quarterfinals.
I did predict that. I have them coming out second, but I do have them then, and that road is so hard compared to coming out first because of the less rest and who you get in that. You get Brazil and Japan, as you said. So I have them coming out second, but I have them going all the way through. I have them getting to the final, and I have them playing France in the final.
Don't give away. Spoiler alert. You've got a spoiler alert, that kind of thing. Our listeners don't want to know the end of the tournament until July the 5th, but we will chat about your picks at the end of this conversation. Let's talk about the first round. Non-American games that have you salivating, Julie Foudy. Non-US games that are exciting for you in that group stage.
I think the first one is France-England. I mean, that right out of the gate. And especially because if you finish first in that group, and France is one of the World Cup favorites, but if you finish first in that group, then you most likely are going to get Germany in the quarterfinal. How about that for a nice reward? So I like that game. I like Brazil-Spain on Saturday, June 13th, because it's Brazil and Spain, and no one really knows much about the women for Spain. We've obviously watched the men for so many years, but they have so little support for their women's program. And in the last 5 years, thanks to Vero Baquete and other talented Spanish players, they've started to make a turn. Germany, Norway is always a good one.
Germany, though, favourites for many, but a different team without striker Nadine Kessler, who's injured.
Yeah, she's out. And they also lost Alushi, who, her, before she was married, was Bayramai. That made of Bayramai. She was a winger that was really good, who just happened to get pregnant right before this World Cup.
Canada versus China, Saturday, June the 6th, the opening game, Christy Sinclair's Canada against the Steel Roses. I just like saying Steel Roses.
I don't favor China. I take them getting out of their group third. But Canada could be interesting. Canada is a scrappy team with a coach that's scrappy as well. He's feisty, John Herdman. And they have all this pressure of forced hosting. They remind me of our team in 1999, where they're on the brink of breaking through in women's soccer, breaking through. So you have... That is such a burden to carry, because you want to do well in the tournament, because you know if the home team does well, then women's soccer will flourish afterwards. You have all those people telling you that you have to do well. So I think that's a lot to ask of this young team.
What about, you mentioned Spain, a very interesting kind of front-heavy new force in the women's game. Can you say a word about France, who I've got down as possibly the best of the European dark horses?
Mm-hmm. France, I love. I think France could win it all, because always in the past, France had a really good striker or a really good outside back, like Bon Pastor, who could get forward. But they never had all the pieces that fit together. They would have huge gaps. And now they have excellent strikers, really good creative midfielders.
Louise Nassib is one of my favorite players in the women's game. Louise Nassib.
Yeah.
She's like the David Silva.
Funny how a lot of the men like her. They were talking about her last night on ESPN FC. But she actually, Raj, is just coming back from tearing her plantar fascia. So and she's playing. I don't know if she's going to be 100%. But she actually tore it in the game against the United States earlier in February, when they basically bossed the US team around for 90 minutes.
Julie, we've got to talk about the turf. A lot has been talked about the artificial turf. Can you give us a sense of how you expect it will impact the World Cup? Not just the increased risk of injury, but how it will impact the play at both the attacking and defending ends, and who it will actually benefit?
Well, you're not going to see, as a defender, they're not going to go down for tackles as much. They're not going to come flying in. Even you hear Sydney Leroux talk about, one of her favorite things is to come flying in, crushing defenders as a forward. And she said, I just can't do that. If I do that in game one, then I will have a raw leg, literally up and down both sides, and I can't play that way. I mean, Abby Wambach is talking about wearing full-length tights, which I can imagine are incredibly hot. So those are the things they're thinking about. And the other thing is, like a player like Lotta Schelin in Sweden, who's their star player, who's 30 years old, though, she has had some knee issues, some knee tendonitis. And already, when you translate the Swedish papers, they're talking about how they're worried on the turf how her knee will react, and so they're going to limit her minutes. So those are the things that totally alter, especially with seven games now and an extra game, which is why, actually, in the end, I think it plays into the favor of the United States, oddly enough, after they fought it for so long, is because they have the depth where they can go to their bench, and when a player is maybe picking up something from the turf, they can go to another three players on the bench that can fill in.
You know, they have the depth, but that ball zips off that turf at pace, and for a long ball kind of direct attacking style, like the US player of Abby Wambach on the field, I look at Japan, defending champions, with their kind of possession game, their tiny passes, their paper cutting. And you have to think they were not fancied by many in the last World Cup. Seeing Japan with their possession percentage, their love of passing, going to be very interesting to see how much they benefit from actually this game being played on turf.
Right, and benefit from the fact, to the point I was just making about it being less physical, right? You can't get down on the turf as much and tackle in. Which is a game, teams like the United States and some of the Northern European teams play more of a physical game. It, the, as Spain's and Japan's, and the Asian nations will love that.
Julie, you know me well. I'm a horrible person. My only pleasure is in the failures of others. The Germans, they've got a word for that too. Schadenfreude! Now, one of my favourite stories in sports, the 1972 Miami Dolphins and the rumour, which I think is quite real, they get together every season to hoist a glass of champagne whenever the last undefeated team in the NFL loses. As a member of our beloved 1999ers...
I know where you're going.
you're a visionary. That's why you should be FIFA president. You know everyone's tricks. You're a 99er. There's part of you, a teensy-weensy part, a teeny part, Julie.
Enjoy being part
of the last victorious U.S. team.
No, not at all. In fact, it's like I want it more than anything so we can stop making that comparison. I get asked this a lot. You know, people off the record are like, really, do you really want them to win? I was like, come on, like the game. Look what happened in 2011. You go back 4 years to that send-off game, which we just called on Saturday, right, in Red Bull Arena, sold out, packed crowd, third sold out game of the send-off series. Rewind 4 years prior, we called the same match in Red Bull Arena 4 years earlier as they were going off to the 2011 World Cup. They couldn't even get 6,000 people in that stadium. There's no energy, there's no excitement about the sport for women's soccer 4 years ago, and then 2011 happened, specifically that Brazil game and Abby's header in the closing minutes that takes them through to penalty kicks, and they go on. You know, there was so much enthusiasm generated around that, even though they didn't even win the World Cup, that all of a sudden the country cares about women's game again. They know the players, there's an excitement. I see my kids, you know, now 6 and 8, you know, they go to the game on Saturday. They have Wambach and Rapinoe jerseys on. It's beautiful to see. And so for us to stop having to say, you know, the last time they won in 1999, and us to have to keep making that comparison, I think actually would be a welcome change. We'd love to say, okay, you know, here's the team of this generation and what great role models that brought it back finally, the United States.
Let me ask you this before we talk about predictions. The final is going to be played July 5th, Vancouver. How do you imagine the profile of the women's game is going to be changed? Will it be changed irrevocably by this World Cup? Or do you imagine, like World Cups past, we're going to feast on the women's game for a month and then move on?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I'm most hopeful about with all of the FIFA news happening is that, and I know it's a long list of reforms, but with a new group coming in, I mean, you look at the billions of dollars out there that FIFA is making, and they are mandated, right, to, of course, pay each of their members equally, as we know, and everyone gets their cut. But they're also mandated to give 15% of that to their women's program. But there's no transparency to that, and there's no checks and balances. There's no way of knowing that they do give that 15%. When you know they're not, because we've now heard the stories about all the success, and the federation and the actual teams are not benefiting from all these millions of dollars that's going into the pockets of people running it. So I think, gosh, we're at such a tipping point with the women's game. You're seeing those second tier countries like Spain and France and England and countries that haven't cared about the women's game. If they just invest a little bit, I mean, look at South Korea, who hasn't played a friendly in their home country for 17 years. And that's an economic decision. They don't want to pay for the women, for teams to come over to play their women's team. But yet they're still pretty good. They can hold the United States, the mecca of women's soccer, to 0-0. So imagine if they just put a little bit of money in to these programs and started funding them. And imagine if those programs then started attracting sponsors and fans and money and this whole untapped market and potential we haven't even looked into. And that's what I'm hopeful for that would come out of this World Cup, is you're going to see those second-tier teams in those countries who have invested in the women's game, like France. If they can win a World Cup, then that's the message you're going to send to other countries. Just look what happens when you do spend a little bit on your women's program.
I think we've just heard your first campaign speech. A vote for Foudy is a vote for change. I'm going to stop pressing the Foudy for President buttons right after we get off the phone. Who's going to win it all, Julie? Who is going to win it all?
I want the United States to win it all, and I do think they will win it all. So I'm taking them. But the three teams that I think realistically have a chance are Germany, France, and the U.S. But I got the U.S. Even though our U.S. team looked less than World Cup champions on that Saturday against South Korea. If you had seen Japan right before the Women's World Cup in 2011, I would not have taken Japan to win the Women's World Cup in 2011. And look what happened.
Last night, I dreamed a dream where a Megan Rapinoe inspired U.S. with Sydney LaRue, the breakout star, won it all, Julie. So let us all dream that dream together. We are grateful to you. We're grateful to you and Bob Lee for the amazing coverage that you guys have done. I mean, really a national service on SportsCenter the past couple of days covering the whole FIFA debacle. You are going to be covering the Women's World Cup on ESPN throughout from both Connecticut and then going deep into the Manaus-like conditions of Canada. We wish you all at ESPN Godspeed. Thanks for coming on, Julie.
Thanks, Raj.
To American glory.
Wonderful woman, Raj.
Oh, what a woman, Dave. What a human being.
Foudy for president.
She is the divine elected chosen one.
Yep.
Let's fire up the bandwagon. You can do a dirty tricks.
Let's fire out the Ravens, Roger. First Raven from Colton Rutherford. I love that name. I was christened a GFOP during the 2014 World Cup. I sighed throughout the year when the TV show would come on, but alas, I was a GFOP now. I couldn't miss it. All that being said, I became a fan of Crystal Palace and now need advice on a license plate. Still can't quite understand why he sighed. I'm hoping to customize my license plate to either an MIB phrase, word, etc., or just to profess my love for soccer in general. I need your advice. My home state of Arkansas needs to be opened up to the soccer world. What are your suggestions for the bona fide MIB / soccer license plate phrase? It's a 2003 steel gray Mustang. Good color choice. I like a steel gray car.
It's fascinating. Arkansas, David.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty basic what you should go with. I'd go with courage.
Yeah.
I'd go with dominate.
Dominate with an 8 on the end.
Yeah. No, or like as a that. Palace fan, you could do Shamak Mobile.
Yeah.
Probably go down well in Alabama Mobile. Yeah.
Kayla.
Or Rebecca. You use three E's like people do down there for the Rebecca parts in honour of Khaleesi.
Yeah, I like that. All strong ones. Rog, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Saka, Scribe, Raven of the Week is Alan Drayton. Did you guys ever watch any early 90s British television sitcoms like Are You Being Served or Last of the Summer Wine? If so, which one was your favourite? I can't imagine anyone else my age in America has seen / heard of these television shows unless they stayed homesick in their adolescence and passed by PBS on their way to Maury or Jerry Springer. The only reason that I know of these shows is that my grandmother is West Indian and spent much of her adult life in London working as a nurse. Because of this, trips to my grandmother's house always involve watching a Mr. Humphreys being asked, "Are you free?" These truly are magnificent shows that I grew up with and just wanted to see if my sentiment was shared with the both of you. I remember both shows very well, Rog.
I mean, what were our influences? I'll say one of the highlights of my Brazil 2014 World Cup experience was a night spent in a bar with Ruud Gullit.
Yeah.
One-time World Footballer of the Year.
That was amazing.
With him spending hours doing his impersonations of British sitcoms he'd watched as a youth.
A whole episode of It Ain't Half Hot, Mum.
These were all overtly racist, sexist and homophobic.
But Ruud Gullit loved them.
The one he loved most was It Ain't Half Hot, Mum, a British army comedy set in India and Burma during the last months of the war. Ruud Gullit can do several monologues, most of which involve British soldiers mocking the local natives, essentially behaving like Leicester City players on tour, minus sex and cell phones, Dave. What were your influences?
Well, I always liked The Good Life and Robin's Nest, but we've spoken about this before, Rog. The second I started seeing American sitcoms, you know, Taxi, that was a show I loved when I was young. I was probably like only about 12 or 13 when that was on British TV. I loved it. I remember my friend Rowan Smith coming in with a boombox and just playing the theme music from Taxi. It was just so good.
That was back when Marilou Henner was Marilou Henner.
Oh, just loved that show.
Most, for me, most of my youthful influences
and the Rockford Files
came in from, I never got into that.
Love the Rockford
Never.
Fast.
What do you like about it?
Just loved it. Do you know, when I first came to America, I landed at Dulles Airport and I went out, and I've never been to America before, and I've talked about this before, and went out onto the freeway, no doubt, in Maryland, and immediately thought, oh my God, I'm in the Rockford Files. Because to me, it looked just like San Francisco because of the green signs on the freeway.
The cars were different. They felt different. Most of my youthful influences came from America. Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Bachelor Party era Tom Hanks. Mm. Duckman in Pretty in Pink. Far too much influence on my life. It's why I never kissed a woman before I met my wife. Mm-hmm. Bruce Willis in Moonlighting.
Yeah.
The two great British shows I adored and still watch.
You might have kissed a woman if you hadn't have constantly been like pouring at the seersucker suits in front of you, Rob, on your dates.
I didn't know you were meant to do that.
Yeah. You weren't meant to do that. That was the whole point, Rob.
Not the 9 o'clock news.
Yeah, great show.
Brilliant social commentary and satire.
But not as good as Saturday Night Live.
Direct line, though, from what they did to what John Oliver does today.
Sort of.
And The Young Ones, David. Mm-hmm. Another BBC gem. An anarchist, a hippie, a punk, and, quote, a cool person living together mm-hmm. in student accommodation. I watched a bunch recently. The whole series is on Hulu. Mm-hmm. I believe it once played on MTV. To watch it as a 12-year-old and see people perform surreal, socially aware comedy for the first time on the BBC mm-hmm. was to feel briefly alive.
Mm-hmm. I used to like A Round with Alice as well, Rog. Peter Alice playing golf with celebrities.
We need to bring that back.
We're going to try. Okay, your weekend, Rog, looks like this. There's still more football to come. This football season will never end, Rog. The Champions League final.
Last time to hear
the
that.
The Champions! Yes, Seth might own the rights to that as well, Rog.
Oh, he doesn't.
Juventus versus Barcelona Saturday at 2:45.
Is that going to be Arsenal Aston Villa part two, David?
Maybe.
With Messi, Suarez, Neymar up front, Barcelona's have got the most potent trio since Bananarama.
Yeah.
Gigi Buffon said this week, Lionel Messi is an alien that mm-hmm. dedicates himself to playing with humans, and watching his goal last week against Atletico seems to be no hyperbole there. They should be forced just to play the three guys, David, to make it a fairer fight. Can we get a prediction from it?
Barcelona 3-0.
You can get 9-2 odds on Juventus. I am going to take that. I think it's going to be the shock of the ages. Give some love to the Serie A, which used to be so dominant in the 1990s and is now what English football used to be, seen as the backwater of Europe.
The opening game of the Women's World Cup, Rog, the World Cup, Canada versus China, that's Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. And in an MLS, San Jose versus Dallas, Sunday at 7 p.m. also on Fox Sports 1. Rog, we got an exciting announcement about the Men in Blazers. This summer, me and Rog are going to be covering for Esquire Network, Rog, so us, the running of the Bulls in Pamplona. This did get announced. It got a little buried amongst all the news coming out of Switzerland and Brooklyn, Rog.
We only signed up to do it because we thought Luke Longley, BJ Armstrong and Tony Kukoc were going to be involved.
Different kinds of balls, Rog.
I love Luke Longley.
We're going to trade Soho for Spain, Rog, northern Spain. We're going to do live shows from Pamplona beginning July 7th, every single evening, Rog. That will be 2 a.m. Eastern
Live from Nacho Monreal's hometown.
Yeah, the show is going to air while the Bulls are actually running, Rog. And we're going to be right there, quite close. If you thought our regular TV show was suboptimal, just wait until you see what a live Men in Blazers broadcast looks like. And then we're going to do a recap show that will happen the next night at 11 p.m.
I'm essentially going to read a lot of Hemingway.
Yeah.
On air.
Live on air.
On Esquire.
Yeah.
I will say this.
Yeah.
If you have, and this is why I'm fascinated.
This is a call to GFOPs.
To me, life is very short. Why would you want to make it shorter by running the balls? I do not understand the mindset of human beings that expose themselves to great risk. If you want a risk in life, just invest in a risky stock.
Yeah.
I think that should probably give you the most thrills that you need. But many of you in America, because hundreds and hundreds of Americans run the balls every year.
Yeah.
If you have run the balls and live in New York City, can you email us or tweet us?
Or send us a raven.
We would love to interview individuals, collect your experiences and understand your experience.
Or if you know great people who've run with the Bulls,
we're going to shoot you on film, so email us.
There's many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in this week, Rog?
A book.
Oh!
Terrorists at the Table.
Yeah.
Why Negotiating is the Only Way to Peace by Jonathan Powell, former British Foreign Office bloke turned international negotiator, oversaw Britain's negotiations with the IRA. I've long been fascinated by the art of negotiation. When I first came to the US, I took a negotiation class at a school in Cambridge, David. One of the best things I've ever done. And in this book, the author looks at negotiating techniques that have been employed by the Bas Separatist Group ETA, the IRA, the African National Congress, the Mozambique Liberation Front, and the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. All of those, three or four of those, are involved in FIFA. His thesis is that military strategies are critical, but they rarely work alone. It is a fascinating insight into the conversations I had at these tables. Gerry Adams once leaned across the table during a tense negotiation, the IRA gent, and said to him, "The thing I like about you, Jonathan, is that you blush when you lie." And he replied, "Unlike you, Gerry, unlike you." It's a fabulous piece of thinking.
Sounds really interesting, Roger. I properly love watches. You know that I'm a big watch fan, bigger watch fan than you, I think, Roger.
I don't wear one right now.
Right now, I'm craving the Bremont Wright Flyer. It's on my Instagram. I really want one of those things, but they are perhaps a little pricey for Devo right now. George, my son, G-Unit, G-Mac, he seems to have caught my love of watches, has been begging for a watch. I did a lot of research about what is a great watch
for
to
a
buy
four-year-old.
For a four-year-old who can't tell the
George
time.
George now has a Bremont.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have a Bremont Wright Flyer. He's got the Timex men's camper watch, Rog, but he's got the boy's version of it. It looks like a soldier's watch, which is so good. It's like a watch that a proper soldier would wear to war. I gave it to him last night. He slept with it. He wanted me to tie it on the outside of his pajamas so he could just hold it up and just look at it all night. Can't tell the time. He just said, what time will it be pointing to when I woke up? I said 7. He slept until 9 this morning. I think the ticking of the watch like kept him sleeping way longer. He's never been happier with anything I've ever got him, including his Jake and the Pirate sword, including his lightsaber that he travels everywhere with. He probably loves his watch. That's the Timex men's camper watch for boys. A bargain at $25.54 on Amazon.
Wait till you get him Andrew Jennings' book on FIFA corruption as
a book.
Yeah,
he'll love that. He also can't read. A watch for a boy who can't tell time, a book for a boy who can't read. Rog, lots of other ways to connect to us. We recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014, Rog. We're years behind.
Play that
on iTunes, Amazon and Google Play.
He'll be asleep in a second.
It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league and the USA nearly won the World Cup.
The second is more believable than the first.
Have a listen and then a sad nap. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. I love Spotify, Rog. I'm thinking of buying Spotify Premium. Our mixtape for the Women's World Cup is up now.
You said that as if you were going to buy the company.
I might buy the company. We'll see how my negotiations with Sony over Embassy Road
Don't negotiate with terrorists.
MenInBlazers.wikispaces.com/. That's a wonder of the modern world. And MenInBlazers.com. You can sign up there for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. Twitter. At Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, Rog, on Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies, and we've got a Facebook too. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, that's maintained by GFOP's
Akshay,
Calvin, and Alex. And you can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can email us at meninblazers@gmail.com,
particularly if you've run the balls.
Yeah, we say things at the same time, Rog. Vendorpunk.
Warpig.
Who wants to sex Matombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Seth Bladder.
Is that your analysis?
Lean to linen.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America.
And Kung Fu Fighting Loretta. Greta Lynch, Roger.
Julie Foudy for president!
Without a doubt. Or Bob Lee.